Welcome, everybody. This is Sources from the Sofa. This is Rome. We have Aaron and Jason. And today, it's Wednesday night. By the time this gets out to you, it will be Thursday morning or early afternoon. So that means college games of the week. Aaron's college games of the week. We do a post on YouTube. Full episode goes out on Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. But this might be a new record for Aaron listing. I thought it was 14 or 16. What is it, Aaron?
Let me count while we're here.
God, 14 looks like.
14. I think we had like 20 one time last year, right, was, Jason?
Yeah, there was one of those early, there was one of those early weeks that was a lot.
Yeah.
It was pretty ridiculous. Lot, yeah. So
I try to keep the list short, but I got a little carried away. I had about
got too excited.
At least 2 to 4 more games I could have added.
Yeah. You got a little carried away. There's a lot of games.
It'll be a bonus game, I guess I'll put on there.
But there's been college football games every day for like 40 days straight. It's like Christmas or something like that up until early November. So it's a special time of the year. There was games on yesterday. Last night, there's one today. I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, nothing worth really watching. But yeah, there are games on pretty much. I mean, last year we had kind of the same thing with football for like 45 straight days. So I guess it's that time of year. So
yeah, pretty nuts. So we got 2 games Friday to kick things off, and then the rest of the slate on Saturday. Are these in chronological order, or this is just how they popped up on your random bookie app?
Yeah, how they popped up.
Beautiful.
Don't know the time. I know Friday's in chronological order. It looks like it's probably pretty close. It looks like we got some, it's close. Yeah. It's within reason.
If you guys haven't had a chance to check out the recap from week 7 and other weeks, they're up on YouTube. We have been doing just the Lions, or at least Aaron's college games a week, but we have a couple recaps now from the past few weeks. So I think we'll just kind of keep it going. Games a week, and then the recaps the following Monday after that. So Aaron, go ahead and kick it off. Games of the week. Week 8. You got Louisville, Miami. Take us away.
Yeah, like Friday night, we got Louisville coming off a bye week, traveling to Miami off a bye week too. I mean, Miami's looking pretty. What are they, number 2 now in the AP ranking poll?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a big game in the ACC. You know, everybody's talking about when is Miami going to slip up. I don't see it here. I like Miami to win big. I like them to cover this 13.5 against Louisville. I people are talking about Louisville being a sneaky play here. I don't see it. Louisville doesn't run the ball very good. If you can't run the ball against Miami, against this defense secondary, you're going to struggle. I just think Miami's dialed in, given where the ACC and kind of where everybody's at right now in college football. This is going to be another statement, standalone game for Miami. I like Miami big at home against Louisville on Friday night.
Nice. You were up on Louisville early in the year.
I mean, I like the Louisville team. They're okay. I just don't, I don't like them in the spot. Miami at home, bye week. Miami really set their schedule up nicely with the 4 games to start the season. Then they got the bye to prepare 2 weeks to prepare for Florida State. Then get a bye following that game and get Louisville at home. A nice job by their AD and administration by scheduling how they set it up this year. Louisville's just been, a bit inconsistent as far as running the ball. And Miami's really, really good on defense, and they can score with explosive plays. I don't like Louisville in the spot. I think they lose by 17 to 20 points at least.
Beautiful. Next game, Nebraska, Minnesota.
Yeah, Nebraska, Rome, that's your squad. A lot going around that program right now with everything that's surrounding Penn State and that coaching search. But Matt Rhule, who was, a walk-on at Penn State back in the glory days, rumored to be part of the coaching search there. How dialed in is he going to be coming off a short week after a road game against Maryland? They travel to Minnesota. We know Minnesota struggles to score points, but always puts up a good fight. This line has come down a bit. I like Minnesota at home to cover 7.5. I mean, if Nebraska's, not awake at this game, this could be an upset here. We talked about it on Monday during the recap, kind of 3 teams in the Big Ten. Could Nebraska be maybe that 4th team that can make a push for the playoff? This is a big road test at Minnesota, but I'm going to take Minnesota getting the points here Friday night. I like their chance to maybe pull off an upset. Ultimately, I think Nebraska wins, but I'll take the 7.5 from Minnesota.
Wow. Nebraska didn't look too sharp either in the last game, so a little cause of concern there. Matt Rhule, I guess really he's best friends with the AD at Penn State, really close, at each other's wedding. And he was really complimentary in like in years past. Rumor mill for him to go there. But then someone pointed out that he also does not have a great record against top 10 teams. He's like 2 for something. So very similar to what James Franklin was. Can he change that around? I hope he doesn't go though. Nebraska finally got something going on. But I did like your little rumor mill picking up steam on Jason's Freeman. Pretty wild.
I don't know if I have claimed that he's Jason's Freeman, but yeah, Marcus Freeman ruined. Rumored to go to Penn State as well. You give it to Penn State, they're swinging for the fences. I think they're trying to take any available, you know, or I don't even say available coach, but really any big-time coach that they can put a name out there. So it's a great call by Aaron. He had the sources before anyone on that one. Ultimately, I don't think he takes it from Marcus Freeman. That is, I think it'll be somebody else. But you know, Penn State, they need it. They want a name. They probably got the financial resources to get a name. So we're taking a shot. I will go back to your play here, Aaron. Though I agree with you on Minnesota, and even go back to the Miami game. If it wasn't for that bye, I think this would have been the time we probably would have thought it was the slip up for Miami, but I think that's the saving grace. But I agree with you on Minnesota right now. I think that's the weird Friday night game where 7.5 is a lot of points and Nebraska wins, like you said, but it's close. And I don't know, there seems to be a lot with Matt Rhule when it came to, you know, his NFL tenure, and then I got to Nebraska, finally got things going, as you're saying, Rome, but I don't know. That seems a little bit like too convenient what's going on and maybe the right fit for him back at Penn State.
Yeah, I'm trying to look back at their past games. Everything has been close except for a few beatings, but those guys weren't like real teams. Anyone who's been somewhat decent, everything's been, what, 7 points it looks like?
Yeah, I mean, they won last week. I mean, a short week, another road game. They won Saturday at Maryland. We were on Maryland as far as the Westgate getting 6.5. Now you get a short week traveling. The question surrounding Matt Rhule, he hasn't denied his interest in Penn State. I mean, I think if Penn State offers him, he takes the gig. But like I, you know, I broke the news last week. We were ahead of the curve. I said, look at Penn State, their main target will be Marcus Freeman. I agree with Jason. I think the interest level there from Penn State is high. Marcus Freeman, not so much. That's not to say he won't take the gig. We'll see what happens here in the next few weeks. But Matt Rhule, if Marcus Freeman does not take the job, I think he does take the job in Nebraska. But Rome, I'm not gonna break the news on another tidbit that Nebraska's next possible coach could be. I have some inside information there. But I'll have to wait to see how these dominoes fall. But I've got a candidate for Nebraska that you would like. Rome.
Awesome. Yeah, let's save it. Let's move on to the Saturday games because we got a big slate here. Oklahoma, South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma coming off that first loss, Rome, and that Red River rivalry shootout against Texas did not look good offensively. I mean, Mateer just did not look great. You know,
he's supposed to be
out a month. They brought him back after 2 weeks.
2 weeks? Crazy.
You know, South Carolina's kind of struggled a bit here. Now you got to go into Columbus, South Carolina. This, to me, is kind of one of those trap games, right? I mean, Oklahoma was cruising, top 5 ranking, little hiccup. Now they go into a tough road spot. I like South Carolina here at home getting 5.5. I think it's the play. I think it's the side. Oklahoma has not shown me a lot offensively. They've struggled against good defenses. If you go back to the game against Auburn, Texas, South Carolina can play decent defense. Won't be an easy game. I like the Gamecocks getting 5.5 at home.
SMU, Clemson.
I'm going to let Jason fill in on this game. He's been on Clemson the last 2 weeks, and he's hit money on them. I think he has a good read on them. I like a certain side here, but I'm curious to know what Jason likes because he's crushed Clemson -14 the last 2 weeks.
He has, yeah.
I think it's just been one of those things where because Clemson was just so bad, you know, the LSU win, the shocking upset versus Georgia Tech, and then obviously the real big one to Syracuse. But Clemson's got – they got guys. They got athletes. And when you start playing some of these other teams in the ACC, I think North Carolina just was an easy one. Boston College, I just don't think – they don't have the athletes versus Clemson. SMU, though, this one gives me a lot more pause on this one, Aaron. I just think even with SMU not being where they were last year, I don't think Clemson is that good. I think they win the game, but I don't know about the 9.5. Seems a little bit higher than I probably would have the last 2 weeks, where I had a lot more confidence in them. Just because, you know, I think SMU still got something. They're 2-0 in the ACC, them well, even though they have two losses on the year. But I think it's a little too much for me that I won't be going with Clemson 3 weeks in a row.
I agree. You know, I just wanted to make sure Jason and I were on the same page. But I like SMU here plus 9.5. You know, they've lost two games out of conference, both to the Big 12 and Baylor and TCU. I think I saw something that SMU has won 16 straight conference games going back to, the AAC they were in and going into the ACC regular season. This is a rematch of the ACC championship game that Clemson won on a field goal out the horn. I like SMU here plus 9.5. I think, you know, Clemson's beat up on some bad teams. SMU has a little more talent. It's a little more competitive game. I'll say Clemson wins by 6 or 7, but I like SMU to cover here.
Nice. Georgia Tech, GT against Duke.
This is one of those weird lines. I don't know why Georgia Tech's an underdog at Duke. I mean, it was 2.5. It's gone down to 1.5. But, Rome, I'm not going to lie, I like Georgia Tech to win straight up. I mean, Illinois went in and beat Duke. Duke's kind of gotten things back together, winning, what, 2 or 3 in a row. But Georgia Tech's went undefeated. Nice wins against Wake Forest and Virginia Tech, maybe because they're on the road for these consecutive games. But I like Georgia Tech to beat Duke. They're just a better team, I think, better coach. They find ways to win. The wrong team is favored here. I'll take the points. I'll take Georgia Tech to beat Duke.
Nice. LSU, Vanderbilt.
I know Jason chimed in early Monday saying LSU was one of his better plays. I've gone back and forth on this game. You know, Vanderbilt has played really, really well this year. Their only loss was, you know, coming off Alabama. They got the bye week. LSU, again, I think the wrong team is favored here. LSU should be favored here. I'm going to take LSU plus 2.5. They just got better athletes, more of them at more positions. Vanderbilt's good. Wouldn't shock me if Vanderbilt pulls the upset and, you know, you get a the fans storming the field, but I like LSU getting points, better talent. What worries me about LSU, a lot of turnovers, can't run the ball, and terrible in the red zone. Those are bad recipes on the road, but I think maybe they can get that figured out. I'll take LSU in the points to get the win at Vanderbilt.
That feels dangerous. UNLV, Boise State.
Another game where I'm not sure why this is 12.5. I mean, UNLV is undefeated. I mean, they've played in a lot of shootouts. Their defense isn't very good. Let's just be honest. They just won a game against Air Force. Was it 51-48, Jason? Something, some crazy score like that.
Yep.
They've had a lot of weird games, UNLV, but they found ways to win. Boise State obviously isn't the Boise State of last year. They've already got two losses with Notre Dame and South Florida. I think this is a close game. I'm going to take UNLV getting 12.5. UNLV's got a lot to play for. I mean, if they win out, I think they may be one of the teams from the group of five that gets in the playoff. A win at Boise State goes a long ways. I'm not sure they win this game, but I like them to cover 12.5.
Yeah, when Aaron sent these picks over, you know, a couple of the games we're looking for our Westgate contest right now, this is one of the games that I was eyeing there. Didn't know it was Aaron's games to watch, but yeah, 12.5 just seems like a lot of points. I don't know if UNLV is as good as they were last year. I know last year they had all the drama with what was going on. And yeah, like the 51-48 shootout with Air Force was there, but you know, they beat Rome, they beat your UCLA Bruins, you know, I mean, and the Bruins are obviously great. We all know that. No crack smile on that, Rome. Okay. I mean, you posted the video of us talking smack on UCLA. So
yeah,
I figured
I did see that video.
You know, I just figured it'd be a little nicer, but yeah, I mean, I just think that's a ton of points for a game that's probably going to be super close. I mean, Boise State isn't what they were last year. Still a good team, but UNLV's not a bad team. That's a lot of points to be given Boise State for, you know, a conference game to a team that is on top of the conference undefeated right now.
So you got UNLV with the points, Aaron?
Yeah, I'm taking UNLV plus 12.5 here.
It's funny. It looks like a lot of people are taking the Broncos in this game. So interesting. All right. Washington, Michigan.
Yeah, Rome, I want to get your feedback on this one. I mean, I know you're a big Michigan guy. 6 points against Washington. I mean, who do you like? Who do you like in this game? I mean, it's...
Well, first, I think the AP is a joke because I don't think Michigan should have been dropped from the rankings altogether. That's bizarre. but I keep on hearing that Washington should be ranked, that they're a really good team. A lot of big guys are on them, and I think this is going to be a pretty tough one. If this was in Washington, probably lean on them, but 6 points to give them, I'm not really sure. I know Michigan just didn't look. I only caught some highlights of the USC game. They're dealing with some injuries. The secondary looks a little depleted right now, but they're at home. It's going to be a really tough environment, so I'm going to have to lean Michigan.
Yeah, it's an interesting line. I mean, Michigan, I mean, I don't even know if Michigan's really even beat a team of significance this year, to tell you the truth. But Washington, I'm leaning towards Washington 6 points here. I like Michigan to win the game, but I think it's kind of a low score, grinded out type game. 50.5 is the over under. Washington's got the quarterback, Williams. He's explosive. He can make some big plays. Washington's defense has been decent. This is a rematch of the national title game. Remember last year, I think Michigan went into Washington and won outright. I like Washington to cover 6, Michigan to win a close game. I'll say it's like 24-22, Michigan wins.
Next game, Mississippi, Georgia.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth in this game because, I mean, Mississippi was looking great. They looked terrible last week against Washington State. Georgia and Kirby Smart, you know, got that nice win at Auburn. 7.5 seems like a lot of points. Seems like a trap to take Mississippi here. Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin gets 7.5 points, you know. But Georgia last year, they lost at, you know, in Oxford against Ole Miss. Kind of was like the coming out game for Lane Kiffin, Jackson Dart, and those guys. Kind of the game that was supposed to carry them to the playoff till they later slipped up in the year. I'm going to go Georgia here -7.5. I just feel like Kirby and the guys are going to be focused. They're going to be ready. They're going to be dialed in. Mississippi's got a young quarterback. Offensively, have not looked good the last 2 weeks. If you go back to the LSU game and then Washington State. Defensively, Mississippi's kind of, you know, all over the place. You don't know what you're going to get week to week. I'm going to take Georgia here. Curious to see what Jason likes on this game.
I would pull a Rome on this and say this is a stay away for me because, like you said, you're going back and forth. I definitely won't be taking either of these teams in our contest.
That's for sure there.
But, yeah, I like Lane Kiffin a lot. The win against LSU was great. But if you look at the other games throughout this year, a really bad Arkansas game in their third game was pretty close. Last week, as you mentioned, versus a not great Washington State team. They just barely kind of snuck by. Kentucky, their week 2 game was at Kentucky, but that was a touchdown game, you know, and that they won. Georgia's a different animal. And I know like people want to like pray for their downfall and there's some different stuff, but Georgia ends up like dominating in some of these games in the trenches and stuff. And I don't know about Mississippi able to keep this close. Again, would stay away. But given what Mississippi was last week, I think that's what's edging to me. Like Georgia's going to come out and really, you know, prove something in this game. And I would take them. But I don't feel good about it either way. But I do think Georgia wins the game. But the spread at that number, it's just a weird line. 7.5, like it doesn't breathe. So you're telling me it's a 10-point game, basically.
I like Ole Miss with the points. I think they were probably looking a little bit ahead with the game last week. Didn't perform all too well. But other than that, though, Mississippi has come out and played. And same thing with their offense. When they get things going, they look really sharp. Georgia, Aaron, you have had them on upset alert several times already this year. And you've been calling like for like their downfall, and they keep on coming through. But they've been barely scraping by with a couple wins. Maybe this is when it happens. But 7.5 points, I kind of like the points there.
The positive for Ole Miss, I'll just say, even, you know, just on just a pure win-loss for them right now. They mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. You know, they played Georgia. This is going to be their hardest game of the year past this LSU game. Then they go to Norman after that, which an Oklahoma team that is nearly not as impressive. And then they get really the bottom of the SEC where, you know, South Carolina, they play the Citadel, which is one of their gimme games, a bad Florida team and a not great Mississippi State team in a rivalry. So things are setting up for Lane here that he keeps this one, you know, close versus Georgia, then wins out or something like that. I mean, this is a team that could be in the SEC championship game or gets one of those, you know, those golden number 3 seeds that get into the playoff without having to play the SEC title game. So it's a good year for Lane. This schedule, like, it's looking nice for them and what they could do given, you know, the level of competition left. And if they pull off this win, now you're talking about, is this the type of team that could potentially have the type of record that goes undefeated like your boys in Texas last year, that, you know, they get to kind of slide through an SEC schedule that isn't as favorable as some.
Oklahoma, I still think they're really good. They just brought their quarterback too early. If he's back to what he was by the time they play, when do they play? Late at the end of November?
Next week, next week.
Well then, yeah. If they get past this, then yeah, it's looking pretty good. I was going to say, if it gives Oklahoma a little time to recuperate, then you're talking like a dogfight there. But
I mean, I agree with you, Rome. I think Mississippi was looking ahead. It's just going to be curious. You know, you got a young quarterback, first real road test. What will Mississippi do if they fall behind? Will they kind of panic? Will they rush? Will they get turnovers? A lot of questions going in this game. I feel more comfortable with Kirby Smart and those guys. They had the 33-game home win streak snapped a couple weeks back by Alabama. Yeah. They came back and beat Kentucky. Tough win against Auburn last week in a dogfight. We'll see. You know, Kirby Smart, I think he's going to get these guys up. Lane Kiffin's got to have his guys focused too. I agree. I'm not strong on either side, but I'm going to ride Georgia, the more experienced team here, to get it done.
Nice.
I do think they win regardless if they cover or not.
Yeah. Nice. Texas A&M, Arkansas.
This is a sneaky one. I mean, we were talking about this one on Monday. I know this was on Jason's watch list with taking Texas A&M. I think this could be the upset of the weekend. What? I think Arkansas at home, Bobby Petrino, you know, they fired their whole staff, similar to what UCLA did, played Tennessee really well last week, lost a tough game at Tennessee. They come back home. If you look at Arkansas's games, they've had a tough schedule. They played competitive against everybody except Notre Dame. I think this is a real tight game. Texas A&M has been rolling over people. I like Arkansas to cover. I'm pinning on Texas A&M on upset alert. I think Arkansas could win this game outright. And I like Arkansas to cover here.
Wow. Big take. Not sure what to think of that.
I'll say at 7.5, yeah, it's a tough spread. I don't think Arkansas wins the game, but I think Aaron's right about the point. Like, rallied this Tennessee against Tennessee, lost the game, but it was close. They did get blown out by Notre Dame, and that was, you know, the axing of the coaching staff. But you know, they kept it close against Ole Miss. Theoretically, you know, was within a touchdown on that game. So I mean, against the two competitive SEC teams, they were close so far this year. So can you keep them within the field goal? I think with that, if it was 6.5, maybe it's different. But at 7.5, I think there's some room and arguments to take Arkansas in this space.
That's fair. Yeah, the only game that they didn't really show was when they got waxed by your team, Jason.
Notre Dame pinned on, and that was coming off of that heartbreaking loss against Memphis, in which they had the game won. They fumbled inside the 10. We've seen how that goes. You blow a game, the next week you get blown out. I think it's going to be a close game. I mean, A&M hasn't played a road game here in a while. They've been playing, you know, what was it, Mississippi State, Florida, a couple home games. Arkansas is a talented team. They're a talented team that basically kind of threw in the towel against Notre Dame. But as Jason and you guys mentioned, they've been competitive in every game. I think they're competitive here. Will not be an easy win for Texas A&M. I like Arkansas to cover 7.5.
Okay. Nice. Let's do Utah BYU.
Yeah, Utah BYU in-state rivalry here. BYU undefeated. BYU's kind of been going under the radar, just kind of sneaking by, winning games, you know, covering spreads, winning games constantly. Utah, outside of that Texas Tech game, which left a sour taste in my mouth and some other people's mouth, they've been rolling along, winning too. I like Utah here -3.5. I mean, BYU's coming off a late night game, tough win, overtime, double overtime, I believe, against Arizona. And so Utah, outside of that game against Texas Tech, which I think by far is the best team in the Big 12, I think they've been pretty good. I'm going to take Utah here -3.5 at Provo there at BYU.
Speaking of Texas Tech, that's your next game against Arizona State, who let me down big time last week.
Yeah, well, it sounds like the quarterback's going to be back, Rome, because this spread's went from 11.5 to 7.5. So I believe Sam Levitt's back. Not going to matter here. I like Texas Tech to go in the Sun Devil Stadium and still pin it on them. They're very talented. They got a great defense. They can run the ball. Quarterback's pretty consistent, whether it's the first string or the backup guy. Texas Tech has been the best team. I don't see him slipping up here. It's going to take a valiant effort by Arizona State to pull this upset off. I think a lot of people are going to be back in Arizona State. I won't be one of them. I like Texas Tech -7.5.
Lovely. USC, Notre Dame.
This is Jason's team right here. I've got his side. I think he's kind of mentioned it on Monday, but I'll let him chime in and say who he's got, what he likes, and break down this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. Line being 9 where it's at with Notre Dame. I would take USC with the points at this time right now because, I mean, Notre Dame has been good. This is the game. Really, their season's on the line at this one if they're going to get into the playoff. The two losses at the beginning of the year are, you know, the best losses you can get. But this U.S. team, the USC team's got athletes. Rome didn't want to listen to me when they played Michigan. They didn't show up versus Illinois.
Yeah, you and Colin Coward sound the same. Like, I was hearing the same thing. I was like, dude.
Colin's a smart guy. He's a little bit of a USC homer at some point, but he's not wrong. And, you know, they get athletes in USC. They always have. Notre Dame throughout the season, they were slow start versus NC State. That was a game that I didn't love the first half. Last year, they were great. You know, Notre Dame went into USC and really took it to them. I think it's going to be closer. I think Notre Dame wins, but I would edge taking USC with the points.
I love USC this week. I like Notre Dame to win, but agree, this is going to be a tough game. USC has players. They've got athletes. Defensively, they've gotten better. Offensively, they're good. I think this is a high-scoring game. I'm going to take Notre Dame to win 35-30. But, I mean, USC kind of screwed themselves against Illinois, right? That was a 9 a.m. kickoff our time. I went back and looked at the week before. They played Michigan State with an 8 p.m. kickoff here. So that game finished at midnight our time. Then they traveled there with a 9 a.m. kickoff against Illinois. They slept walk the first half, came back in the second half, should have still won that game. This is a night game at Notre Dame. They always make this travel. The last time I believe they were there, they got embarrassed with Caleb Williams, and kind of that was what, you know, questions about what he is, what could he be. I like this USC team a lot. They're better than people think. 9 points is just disrespect. They'll easily cover that. They will be part of my Westgate play, too. I like USC +9.
All right. Last game of the week, Tennessee, Alabama.
Tennessee's kind of a hard team to figure out. I mean, they keep winning games, but defensively, they're not very good. They give up a lot of points. They can score points. Now they go into Alabama. Haven't won there in a while. Alabama's really figured things out. I'm not gonna fall into the trap. I'm not gonna take Tennessee getting 8 points here. I'm gonna take Alabama. I just think Alabama right now offensively has got things rolling. Defensively, they've been playing really well the last couple weeks. Really, really big wins if you count Missouri, Georgia, Vanderbilt. Kind of a gauntlet there. Then you get Tennessee. If I'm not mistaken, I believe Tennessee beat them last year. I'm gonna go Alabama here to win. I think they're gonna try to make a statement. I like Alabama -8 against Tennessee.
Okay. Any final thoughts, Jason?
Aaron's got a lot of games in this list for a reason, because I think there's a lot of big games that are going to decide, you know, some stuff for, you know, playoff implications when you look at that Ole Miss Georgia game, but even something like a UNLV Boise State game that, you know, we're talking who's the group of five team that gets there, and then Notre Dame. You know, hey, Notre Dame, this is how they can get into the playoff. They win this game. They get a really favorable schedule the rest of the way, you know, with the two losses that gets them in at 10-2. And Alabama, you know, we talked about them on our wrap up show. You know, they get past this game. They got, you know, probably tough games in LSU, Oklahoma. But for as much as, you know, DeBoer was getting crucified for his loss to Florida State, you know, they beat Georgia, they beat Vanderbilt, they beat Missouri. This is the end of a 4-game just gauntlet in the SEC that they've had to go through for, you know, ranked teams. This could be a big win for Alabama, for a team that everyone was doubting after week one. So, some really good football going up this weekend. So it'll be interesting. The spreads, I would say, make it more interesting. The 7.5, 9.5 in this weekend, a real interesting betting weekend.
A lot of high numbers for big games. a lot of high numbers for some big time matchups in the SEC.
Yeah. Aaron, you want to provide some locks of the week?
Locks of the week, Rome. I think I just hinted at one about 2 minutes ago. I like USC plus 9. Not going to lie about that. I like Georgia Tech. I mean, getting points against Duke. I mean, you got to take them here. And yeah. I will go with, give me Texas Tech minus 7.5. If you want three locks.
How did we do last week on the locks?
Last week, locks were 2-1.
2-1. It's been 2-1 every week, right?
Yeah. The game we lost on a lock. I don't remember the game we lost, but I think we hit LSU. We hit USC. It might have been Florida. I think Texas A&M might have screwed us last week with Florida.
You had the over on Alabama, Missouri.
Okay, that's what it was.
You had
lost that
USC
by half a point.
And then LSU.
Yeah, we lost that by half a point, the over in Missouri. Yeah. It was 51.5. The total finished at 51.
That's crazy.
So
that was such a good game. Missouri should have scored at least one more time.
That game should have went over. Yeah. That game should have went over. I mean, they had a lot of points early, didn't get it done. But Rome, I want to give, you know, a couple bonus games for you too. I didn't add to the list. You know, you were talking a lot of smack. I saw the video, like Jason mentioned earlier, about UCLA hating. That's a game to watch. I love UCLA this weekend. In fact, I mean, I might just pit it, you know, I might just take both SoCal teams as part of our Westgate. I like UCLA minus 3.5 at home against Maryland. Love the way they're playing. Maryland coming off some emotional losses at home against Washington and Nebraska, now traveling to the West Coast to play probably one of the hottest teams on the West Coast. I like UCLA minus 3.5. In another game, Rome, I didn't add, but I'm not going to say they're going to lose, but I'm going to put them on semi-upset alert. Oregon traveling cross-country to Rutgers. This is a 17-point spread. Rutgers is not a bad football team. They can score points. We'll see how Oregon responds from a loss, but I think it's going to be closer than people think. Or if Oregon doesn't get their shit together, they could travel back there and lose. I like Rutgers to cover 17 against Oregon and keep it close.
All right. Very interesting. We talked a lot about Rutgers last year. Not so much this year. Love it. Love it. So Aaron's locks of the week, Georgia Tech plus 1.5, Texas Tech minus 7.5. And USC plus 9 and 2 bonus games. 16 games for you guys on Aaron's College Football Games of the Week. Week 8. That's pretty crazy stuff. Final thoughts? No? We'll see how it goes.
I mean, Jason's got 3 picks this week in Westgate. Rome, you and I got 2. I basically have hinted at USC. I don't know if one of you guys are taking that game. Rome, I think, you know.
What was the record last week, by the way?
We went 6-1 last week, Rome.
For the games of the week.
Oh, games of the week. Games of the week last week was a rough week for us, actually. We went 5-7 last week, Rome.
Oh, man. Is that the first losing week?
Second. Well, I mean, we got screwed because we did the show on Wednesday. We had Arizona State, and then 2 days later, the quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, we wouldn't have played that game.
We could throw that out. Yeah.
So, we released it. I'll count it. It's just how it goes. So, 5-7. But without that game, we've been 5-6.
Yeah, dude, I wish I knew that. Yeah, because that info came after we gave.
Yeah, they came in Friday. So,
yeah, but came before Rome picked Arizona State for the Westgate pool. So
obviously, when he was on the John, he didn't check that one.
It was not circulating yet because I remember looking that up. Awesome. So total, what is it? 47-36.
That is correct.
Nice. And 2 pushes?
Yes.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Check out, if you missed it, recap from week 7. It's on YouTube. We'll have recap next week for week 8. Games of the week in the books. Okay. This is Source from the Sofa. We're going to talk a little baseball since we haven't really talked too much in the playoffs. We are in the league championship series today. Since we're recording Wednesday night, what was it? Game 2? Game 3.
Game 3?
In the Blue Jays Mariners. Crazy. They looked really dominant in their first 2 wins, and that was in Toronto winning 3-1 in Game 1, and then in dominating fashion, which I did catch a little bit more of that, at least like 6 innings of that, 10-3 against the Blue Jays. People looked defeated in Toronto. But Toronto answered big today in game three in Seattle, winning 13-4. On the other side in the NLCS, we had the Dodgers and the Brewers make it out. Brewers, big game, 5-win against the Cubs to face Dodgers. Dodgers flew over to Milwaukee. Brewers had the best record in the year, right? Really good team all around, really good hitters, really good pitching. And it's been quite the whirlwind. In game one, Dodgers ink out a victory 2-1, in which was a pretty fun pitching duel. It was Blake Snell who went 8 innings deep. I thought he should have been allowed a chance to finish off and do a complete game, because his stuff was not deteriorating. It was on point. But they elected to kind of scare the shit out of everyone, have the bases loaded in the ninth inning. And I'm just like, dude, what the fuck is up with this team?
What's funny, Rome, they brought your guy in, Blake Trinan, who you were literally like, not bring in.
But he came through, man. He actually came through because he actually got the other pitcher out of the jam. Was that correct? Am I remembering things?
Yeah,
Sasaki.
Vesia? Or Sasaki, yeah.
Yeah, Sasaki, Roki, man, been on point so far this season. He's been like the surprise closer for the Dodgers. If you guys don't know, Dodgers have not had much of a bullpen all this year. And they,
where's,
they
kinda... Jason, where's, Tony Scott? Where's he at or whatever?
Tanner Scott,
yeah.
I think he's
Where's he at?
He's, dude, the whole, yeah, I think he's been out here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Sasaki's been the gem this season, but he just did not look good. Gave up some hits. Blake Trinan, man, bases loaded, lights out. Got a guy first of all, it was a wild sequence of pitches at the end where he almost hit the batter twice. If the batter doesn't move or back up, that's a score. We're going extra innings. If not, Milwaukee's more than likely winning in that in the bottom of the ninth. There's just no outs, but that's not the case. And Trinan gets a very lucky save in game two, which was yesterday, was beautiful, man. It was beautiful. I'm trying to pull it up here, where the Dodgers won 5-1. But if you're watching from the beginning, Yamamoto, who was pitching yesterday, gave up a home run in the first pitch. I'm thinking like, oh shit, they rocked him early in the year. I don't know if you guys remember that. It was like one of the last series of the season, but Milwaukee actually destroyed the Dodgers and made the end of the race pretty tight in the NL West. But Yamamoto responded resoundingly, and nothing was like overly done, but just picked his spots. They let him finish the game. It's the first complete game and the first time we've had back-to-back pitchers going 8 innings or longer in I think like 20 or 30 years. It was really beautiful. Brewers just got choked up, man. They had their ace pitching yesterday, got rocked a little bit, but other than that, though, Peralta, Urrubia, they just had a lot of guys come in. Dodgers were just feeling their stuff. Teoscar and Max Muncy with a really clutch home run kind of put the game away 5-1. They win both games on the road. Now they come back for their next three games in LA to kind of have a chance to close it out. Thoughts? Let's talk about the Toronto Seattle series, then we can kind of jump back onto the LA Milwaukee one.
I think it's been slightly surprising given where the Blue Jays were in usually what's considered the best division in baseball in the AL East, and how competitive being in a division with the Yankees and Red Sox is. You know, the Rays weren't great, but you know, they always got, you know, their own version of Moneyball going out there. The Orioles, obviously, massive disappointment, but the Blue Jays were, I don't want to say they were under the radar, but nationally, obviously in baseball, we talk about Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, and kind of everybody else. And so for a team that was really leading the AL East the entire season, wasn't a ton of talk about them. But, you know, they were a team that had solid pitching, some good hitting, didn't even get anything as somebody like their big free agent side, Anthony Santander, in the offseason. He was pretty much hurt the entire season. And then they were to kind of close out, win the division in the tie with the Yankees. The Mariners, you know, they got a bunch of dudes at the deadline. They were all in. And, you know, I wasn't sure what the Mariners were going to do once they got to the postseason. It came to the Mariners for a while had a lot of good pitching, but just didn't have some of the timely hitting. But Cal Raleigh, I think throughout the year, was the story. And in this series so far, man, the first two games were just kind of shocking in Toronto, just to lose, you know, just to take the wind out of the sails. I think the bounce back for Toronto and the offensive explosion they had is exactly what they needed, but they still got a long way to go and you got to take a couple more games here, or at least one more while they're in Seattle. But, been a pretty entertaining series so far, but this offensive explosion, I think, is exactly what the Blue Jays need to get the bats going.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think if Toronto's going to win, it's offense, right? I mean, offense has been really a good point for them all year. They've been one of the better hitting teams in the American League, and like Jason said, I mean, when we did our quote-unquote second-half baseball preview, Toronto was already leading the AL East, right? The Yankees had kind of lost like 8-10. Boston was moving up. They just moved Devers in a trade. And there Toronto was sitting up top, and everybody was kind of like, hey, how are they doing it? And, you know, hitting. I mean, they've gotten some clutch hitting. They hit 5 home runs today. You know, Seattle, for them, it's pitching, right? I mean, they play in the number one pitching ballpark. As Jason mentioned, they went out, got basically half the infield from the Diamondbacks and Naylor and Suarez, essentially ending Jason's hopes of finishing in the money in our baseball fantasy league after that trade got done. But yeah, Seattle's all in. I mean, they've got the 15th highest payroll, great young pitching, good bullpen. And I think playing the Tigers, a lot of those games were close against the Tigers. You know, they beat Skubal twice. They beat him, what, game one? Or maybe the last game, I don't remember. But yeah, they beat him in that game 5, which went, what, 15 innings. So they played a lot of close games in that opening round. You know, Toronto should have swept the Yankees. They were, what, 6-1 in game 3. New York came back, and then they just beat them in game 4. But essentially, yeah, it was, you know, the long ball was beating them there. So that's where Toronto wins. So game one, a tight game, something Seattle has already been accustomed to in these playoffs. Took the 3-1 win, like you mentioned, Rome. Game two, Seattle came out like gangbusters. This game looked like it could have got ugly early because Julio Rodriguez hits a 2-run home run. They go up 2-0 in the first, bounce back with 5 in the third, and then Toronto just runs away with it. So, yeah, I mean, this can be an entertaining series, but I think for Toronto, it's offense, right? I mean, the pitching is going to be Seattle's. And so Toronto's got a, you know, timely hitting, power hitting. We'll see how it goes, but it looks like it's going to be a pretty good series going forward.
Yeah, we didn't talk much about the divisional series with the Tigers and the Mariners, but, you know, it was a great series. Aaron mentioned the 15-inning game. You know, this is what playoff baseball is all
about. That was so good.
It was so good, man. I was talking to some people that just aren't baseball. People are like, 15 innings, you're watching baseball? I'm like, man, those are the games you're just locked in. Like, no runs are happening. Every pitch matters. And in these games, you, man, I hate watching managers in the postseason of some of these games because I'm, you know, they take Skubal out when he's just dealing at a certain point and then just lets, you know, Seattle get back into that game instantly when it goes to the bullpen. Major League Baseball, I don't want to bring the White Sox into this, but I am anyways. Like, Major League Baseball finally tweeted about the White Sox in 05 where they had 4 starters of the ALCS complete games versus the Angels. Just nothing you would ever see nowadays because these managers going off analytics or whatever they're saying is like, you know, the third time they go through the order, we're taking them out. Or even, you know, just different strategies where we're just going to, you know, pitch 3 innings and you get 1 rotation through the order. Just so many different things that I think when you got some of these horses on the mound, yeah, in that game, I feel the Tigers lost by just not doing that. I mean, it was Snell versus the Diamondbacks, if you remember, or not the Diamondbacks, the Rays back in the day. You remember that series when they took him out when he was just dealing and then the Rays ended up losing? Like,
well, they would take him out for 5 or 6 innings and he'd be at 65, 70 pitches. It was just stupid.
Yeah, they'd always be in this, oh, the third time versus the order, and the analysts say this, but, man, you get into some of these, like, crunch games right now, man. It's like you got to know which one of your horses are, especially in the starting, you know, starting-wise. When they're grooving, you got to let them go, you know, let them keep going. Like, what are we saving some of these arms for? And some of the overly matchup stuff with the analytics, I think that's where it gets lost. And to me, it cost the Tigers probably that series. I mean, there was a lot. It was obviously a 15-inning spectacular where the Tigers could have won. But some of these decisions are the ones I question. Haven't seen that much in this ALE series, but I think, as Aaron mentioned, the bats is when it's going to get this done. So you're going to need to see Vlad and Springer and some of these guys just come up big for the Blue Jays if they're going to win it.
I remember that 15-inning game because I think, can't remember, I ate something. My stomach was hurting once we used the restroom. Thought I wasn't there for quite a long time. I thought the game would be over. Just couldn't get the game to play on the iPad close by comeback. I'm like, what's still going on? And did some posts on socials on our accounts. But Screwball, like, didn't he have like 10 plus strikeouts there, like in the first six innings? Like, he was on fire. And then they even criticized that move on the broadcast. But we were rewarded with back-to-back games because Dodgers, Phillies, that goes extra innings on that error, which was fucking beautiful to watch. And then another tightly contested game, 50 innings deep. Man, that was really nice.
Yeah, Scooble had 13 strikeouts in 13? Six innings. Yeah, and he was at 99, right at 100 pitches and stuff at a certain point. So I know that's the line of demarcation. But man, we're in a winner go home situation. And the guy they put him in the next inning gave up, you know, that run right away that let the Mariners into it. And man, you just got like that six inning number is just weird. Like, why couldn't we get him to seven and whatever's left in that Tigers bullpen? I know we're talking about it. Yeah, I know we're talking about a two, you know, a week old series at this point right now, but the Tigers were an interesting story because of how good they were until August. Literally had one of the most epic collapses there is. Lose the division, still get into the wild card. You know, I guess one of the best troll jobs ever. Let the Guardians win the division back into them and just beat them in the playoffs anyways. But, you know, the Tigers had been a good team for the first, you know, three quarters and just couldn't close it down. And they had the opportunity here and just melted away.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree. I mean, we've talked about it. You know, we're talking about it now. We talked about it last week. You know, letting starting pitchers go if they're filling the groove. Rome, you just mentioned it when he started this baseball section about Blake Snell. There was no reason not to pin him in the ninth. I believe he was at like 99, 102 pitches, cruising. You bring in the bullpen, a guy who's not a bullpen arm, who's been hurt. He's been good, Sasaki, but, you know, he's young. I mean, the guy looks like he's 16 when you look at him.
It's the first time he got rocked, but it was a tough time to get rocked.
Yeah, and then you got to go to Blake Trenin. And as you mentioned, Terang basically avoiding getting hit by pitch. It's just natural. I mean, you're in the batter's box. You're there to avoid pitches. You're not there to take them, you know. But I would have left Blake Snell in. I mean, I think Dave Roberts maybe learned his lesson because he just let Yamamoto go and finish nine innings. I mean, that might have been the time to bring in the bullpen, but given how bad the Dodgers bullpen is, let the guy cruise through nine. It's a victory. No reason to pull these guys. Analytics or not, you got to kind of talk to the pitcher. Hey, can you go out and get three more outs? Can you give me 15, 20 more pitches? You know, your stuff looks good. You're cruising. Let these guys know, hey, can you do it or not? And if the pitcher says, hey, I can't do it, then you yank them. But yeah.
I want to go back to that game one, though. I'll be honest, the Bears were playing on Monday night while that game was happening. So I was at a local.
What audio was on, Jason? Cause you were saying that the Dodgers audio might be playing there at that.
It was not on. I was at a Bears bar. See? So the Bears was playing. So, the Dodgers game was on the second TV though. And so we were getting kind of a crucial moment, no audio going on this Dodger game. And I just see this kind of like, look like amazing catch happened by the Brewers.
Throw
into the plate. And I'm like, oh, like what happened? And everyone's kind of wondering because of the Bears game's audio and thing. I'm like, did they just get a double play? It was an 8-6-2 double play to end this inning. And everyone's all confused. And like that, I mean, that's one of those one, you know, baseball's been around over 120 years or 130 years or whatever has been like, it's probably a play that's never happened in that order.
I wasn't a big fan of that play. I gotta be honest with you. I was still confused when I was watching. I'm like, what the hell happened?
But just the attention to detail for what's the center fielder? I don't know. Is it Frelick? Frelick? I don't know the pronunciation of his name.
Contreras?
That's a catcher.
No.
Oh,
that's
no,
the catcher.
Frelick?
Is Frelick the center fielder?
How do you pronounce that?
That's what I'm asking. And Frelick was the center fielder because it was a Frelick Ortiz Contreras double play in the box score. And so, but yeah, like, I mean, it looked like he made the catch, but then it hit the wall. He knew it hit the wall. He got the ball back in. Runners didn't know what to do. It was a great play. And just how close it was at home plate, too.
Yeah, because Teoscar kind of went back and held up and then tried to go home. Got tagged there because of the force out. And then you had the two runners on first, and then they go into second. Will Smith was just kind of jogging in the third. Wilson Contreras ran over there, touched the base. So, yeah, it was a weird playing sequence that literally with replay, I think, took like 5 minutes. Like, even the announcers, Dave Roberts was kind of, you know, sucking on some sunflower seeds with his yellow legal pad. Like, hey, I don't think this is legal, guys. What's going on here?
Well, it looked like it could have been like an automatic double, right? Is that what they're contemplating? Because he didn't really catch it. He bounced it back into the field of play and then caught it.
Well, I think that was for the runners. They didn't know if he caught it or not. Yeah. And so he was smart. He's got the ball in right away. You know, them not thinking he's trying to tag or whatever, like, or what it was. But, and then I think there was a lot of questions not knowing whether he caught it, because Contreras, just like a, you know, like a first baseman, just reached out and just tagged the plate. And they're like, well, you know, was it a force? This and that. I think it was just a whole mess of confusion, but I think it was a smart play all around on how the Brewers were able to get that in. And, you know, just a crazy play. I just thought it was way more interesting, I think, for me, maybe because I didn't have the sound on and it was a bar full of people not knowing. We're kind of watching a baseball game. There's two football games going on at the one time. And like, it was like, oh, this is super interesting, but we don't have the audio. What's going on? But we're not switching the audio because the Bears are on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And give credit to the umpire crew too. I mean, we talk about it in football, but letting the play just play out, right? Just, hey, let's go back to replay and review it, but just let the play out. Okay, we got it out at home. We got it out at third. You can challenge it. We can review it. You know, we talk about that all the time in football. Like, hey, is it a fumble? Is it an interception? Okay, let's just let it play out and go back to replay and clean it up if we need to. So credit to the umpires for not, you know, ruling anything there. I know I believe you have a couple extra umpires in the playoff games anyway. So maybe one of them saw something and relayed his signal to the other guy, like, hey, this is what's going on. So, you know, credit to them on that.
Yeah. Did you get his catch game too? Dodgers Brewers?
Caught a little bit of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Come on.
It was beautiful. Ohtani, though, he looks like he's like in a pretty big slump. He's just swinging at everything, swinging for the fences, striking out every time. He hasn't been doing well. But it's been like the rest of the staff, though. Smith has come back from injury, clutch hits. Muncy, I think now he has the most home runs in Dodgers playoff history. Hernandez is coming in clutch with some pretty good hits. And Tommy Edman, I can't remember. It was some points last year too in the playoffs where this guy just came out of nowhere and had some clutch hits. And you know, once again, it's a fun group to watch, man. This Dodger team, they really like each other. And I don't know. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, the pitching, I think, by many, including yourself, Rome, were very shocked. Questionable where it was going to be at. But you go into a game three now at home in L.A. You got Glass now on the mound. I don't think the Brewers have even named a starter yet. So I don't
know.
You know, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, last time I saw the probables, they had it was still
Quintana,
undecided.
It looks like.
Okay. But I mean, all the momentum the Dodgers way at this moment, the Brewers just haven't had the timely hitting that they generally did. It's tough to be, I think, behind about the Dodgers going back to L.A. right now.
Is this going to be sweep?
I feel like the Brewers take a game.
Yeah.
But I think you're looking at a 4-1 Dodger win for the series at this point.
I think so, yeah, within five games.
I think they sweep them.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Brewers don't win tomorrow, I think that I don't see them winning game four. It looks like Ohtani's going game four. I mean, Brewers just, you know, we talked about, you know, Dodgers is starting pitching. It's been relatively healthy all year. I mean, Blake Snell missed a lot, but he's been dialed in. I mean, his numbers since he came back from the IL have been great. And you mentioned Muncy now that he can see. I mean, he's been hitting the ball really well. You know, the Dodgers thought they lost him for the season when he got that knee injury, what, in August, when the guy slid into his knee there at third base. He's been clutch. Teoscar Hernandez has been clutch. You know, even Kiki Hernandez has been really good. And Edman, Rome, you mentioned it. He was great last year in the playoffs. That's why he got the contract to come back. You know, Dodgers got a lot of talent, a lot of depth. I mean, their bullpen is terrible, but right now, every time their bullpen's come in a game, they've been up. They haven't really been down in a game outside of that one Philadelphia beat them, 8-1 there in game three of the divisional series. It's going to be difficult. I mean, the Brewers got to, you know, maybe be aggressive. You know, Dodgers are throwing strikes and pitchers are coming after you. They're throwing strikes. They're not walking players. So maybe be aggressive, sit on a pitch or two, try to pin in and play and try to get these guys, you know, some traffic on the bases, because if they fall behind again early, I don't like it. I just don't like it. They're going to press. They're going to struggle. They don't have the starting pitching. Their bullpen's kind of worn down after going five games with the Cubs. It's going to be tough for the Brewers to come back and make this a competitive series, I believe.
Yeah, they look a little defeated after yesterday's loss as well. I'm taking a look at tickets for game three just because it's early, man. It's 3 o'clock first pitch, and it's like the only affordable game that you've it's been cheaper than like regular season games. Cheapest tickets going for low 80s. So, man, I wish I was down there.
You're coming down Friday, huh?
I was debating heading out tomorrow because I'm not working right now. I'll have to be at an office or at a restaurant right now. So, was debating it. Yeah, Thursday night football tomorrow night. Got Dodgers full game. We're doing lines. It's a fun sports filled Thursday.
You think your Steelers win tomorrow night, Rome? Or
you know what? I didn't like it, but I'm liking it. They're calling it the Icy Hot Bowl.
Yeah, I saw that.
Rodgers, Flacco.
Sounds like the name of a podcast for those two to team up for.
Icy Hot, yeah. I'm a little worried though. I'm trying not to be not too high on the Steelers. You know, I don't know. Can Flacco get those wide receivers fed? And can Steelers do enough to take advantage of a really weak defense? I don't know. Who do you guys got?
To win the game, I like the Steelers. I don't know what we're talking spread, but I think to win the game, the Steelers.
I would agree. I like the Steelers to win. I would take probably the Bengals 5.5 to cover on Saturday.
It's 5.5.
Or Thursday here, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thursday games, just like those London games, man. They'll be sloppy or whatever, and Flacco always keeps them in it.
Well, a couple 40-year-olds with, like, short rest, not liking that. Not liking that at all.
It's fair. Before we end, you kind of moved on from baseball. I mean, we really, you know, you missed the biggest baseball story of the day, Rome. I texted you guys about this.
I did see it.
Listen, Rome, we had, you know, His Holiness, my Pope, you know, going down the Vatican streets, and you had some stranger go Cubs. And the Pope, being the truest of White Sox fan that he is, said they lost and kept going.
I didn't catch in the audio. I just saw, like, okay, this is just like some random, like, another pro White Sox, like, AI video. I'm like, all right, whatever. Like,
yeah, it's not AI, man.
I'm just assuming you're, like, take it all in no matter what.
That's a real video, all right, man. You know, okay. The Pope, you know, he, you know, Chicago through and through, Southside through and through, even all the way up to the top of the Catholic Church, and still's got time to troll Cubs fans, man. That's a true White Sox fan right there.
Nice. Nice. Well, I love that for you.
Thanks.
I love
that's a highlight of the White Sox season right there, Rome.
It is, you know, but I'm telling you, Rome, you know, between, you know, we got the Pope this summer, the Bears looking great on Monday night. We're 3-2. Going to play the Saints this week. The White Sox had a big second half. You know, things are turning around for me, Rome.
We got the basketball preview what next week, Rome? So the Bulls that they locked in as the 8-9 seed again? Or I don't know. Maybe they go up. Maybe they go down. We'll have to wait till next week.
And you know, we didn't do a hockey preview. I know Rome talked about it, but he mentioned the hockey preview like literally the day the puck. Yeah, the day the puck was dropping.
30 minutes before the puck dropped.
That's the day before, guys.
Yeah, okay. No, I think it was day of. But it wasn't looking great for my Blackhawks. But today, an 8-3 win. 8-3 win over the Blues and brings the Blackhawks to 2-2-1 in the season. So, Rome, I don't know. I mean, I could be pretty unbearable this fall season if you're going to give me a good Blackhawks team, a Bears team that's going to be on the verge of the playoffs. And, man, what if the White Sox actually sign a free agent? I don't know. Maybe the Pope's going to bring them some money.
That'd be pretty crazy.
For a free agent over 100 mil, that'd be nice.
Well, you guys have a new owner, though, so.
Well, he's still minority owner. I don't know if we're letting the billions in yet, but, you know, we'll see.
It's like a rental deal. It's like the same thing.
That's down the road, Rome. Down the road.
No, he already started making moves, man.
I mean, he's made moves, but he's still not majority owner, so I don't know how much money's going in there. Listen, I'm a White Sox fan. White Sox Twitter is like, we need to sign Josh Naylor. That's our big acquisition. We need a power guy at first base that hits 25 home runs. So, well, I guess White Sox fans will be happy if we get somebody like Josh Naylor.
Final predictions on what happens the rest of the championship series.
Well, As a true friend I am, I'm going to say I'm a little biased, and I'm actively rooting against the Mariners because I have a friend who's a Mariners fan, and he's just insufferable.
Dude, they're all insufferable Mariner fans.
Just insufferable. And, you
know, my God.
The arrogance of a Mariners fan, one of the few teams that's never won a World Series. I think they're one of, what, four
they've
teams?
They've never won.
So I'm rooting hard against the Mariners for that reason.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, it just, you know,
I love it. I'm a hater.
All right.
You don't hear that from Jason a lot. Usually he's rooting for the underdog, given where the White Sox fan he is, the Bears fan he is. But, yeah, there you go.
I think Mariners win in six.
Yeah. I don't want to disagree with you. I really wanted it for the Blue Jays. I think they were good all season. But man, like Aaron said, like they got to do a lot of offense to win this series. The Mariners park at T-Mobile isn't exactly the hitter's park. I mean, they kind of proved that wrong today. But I'm rooting for the Blue Jays that I hate. But I don't know. The Mariners feel like they got something going on this year. And I think your Dodgers have already called it a day there. So we'll probably end up with a Mariners-Dodgers World Series. But I'll be rooting for a Blue Jays-Dodgers.
Dodgers are chilling at the right time of the year.
Yeah, Rome. I mean, I just said it. What, you know, I like the Dodgers to sweep the Brewers. Minimum, maybe a gentleman sweep.
No.
I like the Dodgers advance. You know, we've talked about it. Toronto already lost those two games. Bounced back today with five home runs. Can they keep it going? I like Seattle to get to their first World Series as a franchise. It'd be nice to see. But, yeah, so I think it's going to be Seattle versus the Dodgers. Interestingly, these are the two teams that met the last three games of the series to end the season. So maybe that was, you know, the Dodgers ended up sweeping those three games to end the season. So
we'll
see how
them.
That goes if they end up meeting in the World
That's
Series.
When they started playing well, yeah.
Yeah, I think we said at the beginning of the year or in the mid-year, whenever we did our previews, but NL just seemed to be throughout the season. There is just a little more that whoever comes out of the NL was going to win the World Series. The Dodgers obviously invested a ton and they got, you know, a ton of great players with how much money they spent. But, you know, teams like the Phillies and then the Brewers and stuff, I think there's just more great teams in the NL. So I would have said going into the playoffs that the NL was going to win regardless. The way the Dodgers are playing, and that's a tough team to beat. That's a tough lineup.
Tough lineup. We'll see if some of the bats can actually heat up on the Dodgers side. But pitching, man, it's been really a pleasant surprise. Just, Roberts, let's not scare us too much, you know, if we're only up a run and bringing in a shaky pitcher. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the key, Rome, like you said, will be the Dodgers have been, you know, living with starting pitching. Last year was kind of the opposite. Their
starting
pitching was banged up and their bullpen was great. Just shows you how good the Dodgers are and how much depth they have that they can win in various ways in different postseason. But agree. I mean, I think if they get to the World Series, they're just going to be too much for either Seattle or Toronto. I think Toronto maybe matches up better because they just have the offensive guys to kind of hang in there and put some runs on the board. Dodger Stadium over the last few years analytically has been a hitter's ballpark when traditionally it used to be a pitcher's ballpark.
Well, have you Seattle's seen the amount of home Seattle's runs that they've been giving up?
Yeah, I mean, Seattle's got great pitching. You know, they went out, got some offense there at the trade deadline. I think either series will be good, but I mean, I think Toronto, Seattle's still up in the air. I like Seattle, but I don't see the Brewers. Like you said, they kind of just look like, even their team, the crowd kind of looks like, hey, like everything's been let go. They're done. It's going to be tough for them to come back. If they do, all kudos to them, but I just don't see the Brewers coming back and winning that series.
Nice. We'll see how the rest of the playoffs play out. Really fun playoffs. A lot of great games from the wild card to this point. So really exciting. Really exciting stuff.
Curious. I don't know if you guys know. Jason may know. I mean, I'm assuming Ohtani's going to win MVP in the NL and Cal Radley in the American League. Has there ever been both league AL MVP and NL MVP ever met in a World Series matchup
before? It was last year.
Yeah, there you go.
It was just last year, but that was like the first time, what, like 20 years at least?
Do you think actually Cal Raleigh wins the MVP, though, and they don't give it to Judge?
I think Cal Raleigh's going to win it.
Who had more home runs? I totally lost track.
Cal Raleigh did.
Cal Raleigh did, but Judge was ahead a lot of, like, the batting average was significantly higher.
Oh, really?
And things like that. And
yeah, obviously, there's a little bit of a. Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, Judge missed, what, maybe 15, 20 games of injury? Something like that, right? He had some kind of injury. I mean,
Rome's right. Last year, the MVPs meet in the playoffs. The time before that, 2012, any guesses on the 2012 World Series, who those two MVPs
were? I remember
were?
I was talking about it last year. I just, 2012.
You're close to it, Rome. That was during the every other year Giants run.
Yeah.
Miguel Cabrera and Buster Posey.
Oh,
Tigers. I was going to say Posey, but I wasn't sure if, okay. Well, they played the Royals, what, one year? Was it the Rangers another year? I feel like they beat Texas, they beat Kansas City. Yeah.
Time before that, Rome, do you remember before 2012? Just deep in the archives. You got me down a rabbit hole right now.
I could have sworn it was somewhere like in the 80s.
You would be correct, and you should know this one. It was 1988. It was Jose Canseco versus your man, Kirk Gibson.
Damn. That's awesome.
It happened quite a bit, actually. You had 1980, George Brett and Mike Schmidt. 1976, Thurman Munson with the Yankees versus Joe Morgan of the Reds.
What about Cy Youngs?
You're asking me to do more research.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Well,
yeah.
You're digging down the rabbit hole, Jason, so I'm getting you to work here.
All right. This is how these pods can be wrapped up in 28 minutes and then end up being 48.
Listen, we're just giving great information.
You know, the audience wants it, Rome. You could use it to handicap games, too, however you want. Use it for informational purposes.
You know, sometimes there's just useless knowledge, you know?
I love it.
Little stat of the night, Rome.
Stat of the day. Stat of the night.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to get a good one on this one, Aaron.
Okay. All right.
We'll have to come back later time.
Yeah, we got plenty of time to come back. Come back. I got another couple of clips for you guys coming out in the next few days. So,
all right,
great.
I mean, hopefully positive, Rome, because the last two you sent of me and Jason have been in the negative sphere.
Which one?
I mean, UCLA haters, Liam Cohen lovers, and
The Liam Cohen lovers, dude. Like the animosity coming out of your face, it was like so good. I'm like, I have to get this out.
It was a good clip.
He was like spitting out, "Ah, fuck you, dude." Keep up. It was so good. I loved it. It was really good.
I actually did like that one, but you didn't mention, you know, in the comments, because you commented. I saw you commented on you didn't like the USC pick in one of the videos or whatever you commented on.
I don't remember, dude. Maybe.
But yeah, you didn't comment. You calling us UCLA haters, but we backed UCLA last week. That was a big play. We're backing them again this week, so you know maybe
that worries me.
Wow, you gotta have the proof on the Marcus Freeman scoop. You know, Aaron was scooping everybody on that one.
That'd be so crazy to actually pull it off, dude. I'd be really bummed for Jason.
I don't think they would. I said this before. I think the only school that really generally worries me is if Ryan Day decides to go to the pros or something. I think Ohio State would be the school that Marcus Freeman would worry me on. Yeah, played there. I think that's the one. I don't know if he ever leads to the SEC, but I think Ohio State would be the school that I think he would go for if he's going to leave Notre Dame.
I like I said, Rome, I think he stays in Big Ten country. Ohio State's been mentioned there. Penn State's going to do everything they can. They're going to make the move. They're going to try. They're going to leverage. They're going to do whatever they can. I would have pitted last week at probably 5-10% chance he leaves. I mean, Jason's probably going to make some calls there to see what the interest level is. But Penn State interest level, as I mentioned last week, is high. That's their top target.
When do we have F1 coming up?
This weekend.
F1 this weekend, man. We are in the United States. We are down in Texas at Circuit of the Americas for the United States Grand Prix. We're on big Formula One weekend.
So
we get to sleep in, so it's awesome.
We lines with the guys.
We don't have to wait till, what is that, 12 o'clock noon start?
Yeah. So we'll do some lines, and let's do a little F1. Bring your F1 gear for tomorrow's pod.
Be ready to roll. I wore the IndyCar gear today, man. We're open wheel season, you know?
I'm digging it. All right, that'll do it for Sources on the Sofa, college football games of the week, and a little baseball playoff recap. Gotta love it. We're out.